On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. First, it was pet food in Canada and the U.S. with Chinese ingredients killing cats and dogs. Then, reports of toothpaste in Panama with Chinese ingredients killing people. Now we learned that just last month, food from China bound for the U.S. included dried apples preserved with cancer-causing chemicals, catfish brimming with banned antibiotics, mushrooms laced with illegal pesticides. Monitoring our own food supply has been tough enough. Think E. coli and spinach. Now it looks like a weakened FDA is in no way up to the global challenge. Up next, On Point, big and still unanswered questions on the safety of the food we eat. We'll be hearing in this hour from a former top FDA official and voices from China and the U.S. But first, we're joined from Washington by Rick Weiss, science and medical reporter for The Washington Post. He's been looking at what the FDA has been finding in the 1% of food imports it does inspect. Rick Weiss, thanks very much for being with us.
Pleasure to be here.
You looked at 1 month's ugly findings from China, and it was pretty hair-raising. Take us into what the FDA found.
Well, they find a lot of stuff that you don't want to eat, basically, and it was surprising to me as well. You know, anything from the dried fruit, from frozen fish, to different kinds of wheat or pastry products, they're all what they are, but they're often plus something else. For example, preservatives that are not allowed in this country, antibiotics that are not allowed in this country, cancer-causing chemicals or dyes on top of them, or, you know, other categories that the FDA has very colorful names for, like simply filthy. That's one of the big categories in the FDA document list, or poisonous, as I saw for one big batch of swordfish.
And this, just in the 1% of food that is inspected, how can it be with all these findings? And you're looking here at, 107 different imports that were detained at U.S. ports just last month within that 1%. How can it be that only 1% are inspected if they've got those kind of findings in this food from overseas, from China in this case?
Well, these are the resources that are available under the authorities and the budget of the Food and Drug Administration right now. It's a different situation, interestingly, with regard to the importation of meat from foreign countries, which happens to be regulated by USDA instead of FDA. USDA has an entirely different and better authority, more full authority. They actually go to these countries first. They certify slaughterhouses and meat processing plants, and they say, okay, this is clean enough and good enough for us, and they audit them every year after that to make sure it still looks good. FDA doesn't have the legal authority to do that. FDA basically has the authority to catch as much as it can at the borders as it comes in, and what they catch, they're allowed to turn back, and the rest is, in the stores.
Catch as much as they can within that 1%, which is a pretty tiny helping. This is very much on the table in the news and in international politics this week, Rick. Describe for us where this whole issue of food safety stands between China and the United States.
Well, it's coming at an interesting confluence, really, in the political and economic relationship between China and the U.S. We have this week the start of some very high-level trade and economic talks between China and the United States, the second session, actually, of a set of talks that began last fall, which comes at a time when a lot of people in the U.S. and in Congress are quite upset about the trade deficit we've racked up with China, something like $250 billion, which some people blame at least in part in the way China handles its currency. So there's this whole trend of currency control and the deficit. And then we have this food issue on top of that. It's becoming increasingly clear to people that a lot of the things we get from China are not really up to snuff. And so there's certainly a mood growing in Congress and I think in the public to tighten the reins a little bit and figure out, maybe the sense that we're getting taken for a ride a little bit in this country by China, and how can we make this work out more fairly for us. And I think there's a momentum in Congress right now, one way or another, to change the rules a little bit.
Maybe momentum, and certainly filthy and poisonous do not sound up to snuff, but you quote former trade officials saying that in spite of this inflow of food that you wouldn't want to eat, the U.S. finds itself kowtowing to China. Why?
Well, this is a very interesting relationship we're in with China. Now, China, one thing that we all know about stuff that comes from China is it's cheap. And Americans love cheap stuff. American companies like cheap ingredients because the food they can sell then will be cheaper or have a higher profit margin. Companies in the U.S. have become quite integrated into the Chinese economy, and they're not really so crazy about the idea of changing the rules radically and making maybe a higher quality export from China also be more expensive, because that's going to disappoint consumers when we can't get things as inexpensively as we can now. So that's part of the problem. And on the other side of the coin, U.S. companies are really salivating to get their stuff exported to China, which is, you know, one of the fastest growing markets in the world. You've got 1.3 billion people there. You've got an economy that's growing at 10% a year, and you don't want to mess up your friendship with a country like that if you're counting on getting some deals and selling your stuff to this huge market. So it's a little bit of a delicate situation of how to rein them in and get them to do what we want in terms of food safety and economics without, you know, blowing basically our potential to make money from this relationship.
And at the end of that food chain, you've got Americans putting food in their mouths. You quote John Baylor at the University of Chicago, a big guy in this realm, saying that the federal government seems willing to put the interests of business above the public welfare, even on food, even on what we eat.
Well, this is the interesting thing, too. I mean, government, of course, represents the people, but government also represents business. Some people believe that government under the current administration serves business even more than usual, and there are strong business interests not to tip the ship too much, that this is a calculated risk. Yeah, we'll get a little bit of bad stuff now and then, but look how the money is humming. You know, we're getting all these cheap ingredients again and so on. I think this is a case where the public backlash is really starting to have an effect on legislators, and they're saying, never mind, especially with the Democratic takeover of Congress, you know, never mind what business as usual has been. We need to get some rules in place, and I think now the discussion is all about what are they going to look like and how far are they going to go.
And it's not just on foods that we would immediately recognize. Those juices and fruits rejected as filthy in the FDA reports from 1 month, prunes tinted with chemical dyes, not approved for human consumption, swordfish rejected as poisonous. It's a lot that you can't identify immediately as even from China, sort of ingredients and additives that are in food in almost every shelf in the supermarket these days.
Well, that's a good point. You know, more and more of the foods we're eating, of course, are processed foods. They're frozen foods or prepared foods that have a lot of, you know, the names everyone recognizes, and at the bottom of that ingredients list, the gum arabic, the xanthan, the ascorbic acid, these things you don't even think about, lecithin. A lot of that stuff comes from China now. In a few cases, virtually all of it comes from China because it's being imported from China at prices cheaper than what the U.S. companies tell me they can even produce it at, much less sell it at. And so in a way, we've become addicted to or dependent upon some of these invisible ingredients from China, as well as the larger materials. And you go through the list, and these FDA refusal reports, it covers the gamut. You know, there's official categories for everything: ice cream, fish, fruit, nuts, vegetables, vegetable oils, dressings, condiments. And there's violations in all these. In general, looking back several months, anywhere from 50 to 100 of those or more per month, compared to, you know, 9, 10, 11 from a country like Canada that, by the way, trades much more, five times as much of this stuff with us than China does.
And despite the tougher oversight on meat, a push there as well, you report to Chinese companies kind of sneaking chicken into the U.S. in crates labeled dried lily flour and vegetables, but a push to actually bring in processed chicken from China, maybe grown in the U.S., but shipped there for processing, shipped back. You quote somebody in here who knows this stuff well, saying everyone who's seen the China's chicken slaughterhouses, everyone who has seen them was grossed out, he said.
Well, China, very high on China's agenda is to sell chicken to the United States. Right now it is not certified to do that under USDA rules. The USDA has been out there several times, done audits. It has flunked. Most recently, I'm told by USDA officials, they have now passed. And that sets the groundwork for a several-month-long process that would culminate in China being able to send its chicken to us, something that people are concerned about on two fronts. One, the standard microbiological safety of their meat, but also because China is at the heart of the avian flu scene in Asia. We don't want unprocessed meat carrying avian flu viruses coming over to this country. The officials in USDA tell me their plants look good now. They're ready to go. activists who I've spoken to said, we've been over there too, and we've looked at these audits, and believe me, you don't want to eat this meat. We'll see how that shakes out, but it's interesting to note that there is a little bit of a gamesmanship going on here as well, because China, back in 2003, cut off their boundaries to importation of U.S. beef because of a single case of mad cow disease we had in this country. A lot of cattle people are saying they're basically being held hostage, and that what they understand is that China's not going to accept U.S. beef until we accept Chinese chicken. And so you've got a little bit of an industry war sort of woven into all the geopolitical economic stuff that we're already talking about here.
Rick, your story made me feel a little sick to my stomach. Do you feel trepidation when you go in the supermarket now?
Well, it's tough. You know, one thing that you don't know when you're getting, there's not a lot of country of origin labeling, especially for some of these smaller ingredients. And different countries have different rules. You know, in Canada, they can pull things in from different countries, and as long as it's assembled in Canada, it can say made in Canada. One of the most common phone calls and emails I've been getting in the aftermath of my writing about this is from people saying, how can I tell where this stuff is coming from so I don't buy from China? Well, for the most part, you can't. But there is country of origin labeling legislation that's been starting to pop up in states lately, and I wonder if some of that might start to pop up on the federal level as well.
Rick Weiss, thanks very much for being with us. We'll talking this hour about food safety and the still unanswered questions on food from China, from the whole world, and for that matter, from our own agricultural economy. In just a moment, we will go to Shanghai. But first, with me in the studio is William Hubbard. For 14 years, he was Senior Associate Commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration for Policy, Planning, and Legislation. He's now an advisor to the Coalition for a Stronger FDA. Bill Hubbard, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
I'm good. You've said the FDA is broken just at the time when we've got this flood of food and food additives coming from abroad. Do we have a problem here, a crisis?
Absolutely, Tom. The current system puts all of the responsibility on the FDA to protect us from unsafe food. And the FDA's food safety program has sustained 10 straight years of budget cuts. The FDA has not been supported. It's time now for Congress and the White House to put their money where their mouth is and strengthen the FDA and give it some people to solve this problem.
What's the basic dynamic here? Did we used to have more inspectors on the job when food was coming in from abroad, or we just imported less?
The biggest issue is there's been a huge increase in importation of foods. 15 years ago, only about 2 million came in. Now it's 20 million of FDA-regulated products. In 50 years ago, it was almost nothing. So this 20 million imports of FDA-regulated products, 13 million of which are food, overwhelms the 450 inspectors the FDA has. Just think, 450 people to look at 20 million shipments a year.
So in practical terms, that means all kinds of boxes and bags and frozen crates of stuff coming in here that no one has touched.
That's absolutely correct. FDA tries to use risk assessment techniques to identify the problem areas. But as you've seen from Rick Weiss's reporting, the China market and other Asian countries and other developing countries are a problem, and FDA can only get to a small percentage of it.
Now, can the FDA really solve this, though, if we're importing such a huge portion of our food and food additives from abroad? And here, I mean, Rick was saying about ascorbic acid, for example, there's only one producer left in the United States. Many people saying we are simply dependent on China for these food additives and ingredients. If China doesn't police it effectively at the source, is there any way we can really stop? I don't know. It must be tankers full of this powdery stuff and ingredients, all the rest. Can you really, really do that with inspectors?
Well, it's a good question, Tom. As Rick described, the USDA can, for meat, say to the other country, you must make the food safe before you ever load it on the boat, so that when it gets to the U.S., it is safe. FDA cannot do that. All they can do is open that container when it arrives here.
Well, you can say it, but in a country and an economy as big as China, it may be hard for them to do, even if you demand it.
That's right, and that's why I think you need to beef up the FDA. You need those inspectors opening these containers, sampling these products, identifying the problems, and then going back to the importer and saying, we're not letting your food in. And once it starts getting expensive to have all this stuff rejected, they may stop sending it.
But a big challenge at the other end. Bill Hubbard, we're glad you're here. Let's jump for just a moment to China, to Shanghai. Don Lee joins us, Shanghai correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Don, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom.
We're hearing a lot from China right now. Even today, the Chinese making a big noise about how we care, we want safe products going out of our country, we're on top of this. China is talking a good game. Are they really on top of what their food exporters are shipping abroad, shipping to the United States?
That's right. China ministers are speaking up, and they're defending the quality and safety of Chinese-made goods, and they're urging international cooperation in solving what they say is the global product safety, you know, problem. The difficulty that the Chinese officials have is that there are so many small farmers, tens of millions, and they are producing with very heavy chemical fertilizers, toxic pesticides, and many products lack standards. And so China is having a very difficult time really monitoring and ensuring safe foods, even, you know, for the Chinese, let alone for goods that are going out.
But, Donna, it's not just at the farmer level. You reported on how the company that made that melamine, which was put, ended up in pet food that killed a lot of pets in the United States and Canada. Before the inspector showed up, their response was the owner simply bulldozed the factory so no one could track down what had gone on there. That was incredible.
That's right. When I went to visit this town about 7 hours drive north of Shanghai, I found behind an unmarked gate rubble and an empty kettle that was all that was left of a factory that the farmers around there said had been churning out white powder and spewing toxic gases. It was so bad that the people around there said it made them cry and it killed their crops and the trees. And about 2 weeks before the FDA got there, in the middle of the night, it was demolished.
And this, for food ingredients going into pet food, for that matter, what's going into our food? Bill Hubbard, I mean, we hear these, you know, stories. You go into the supermarket, everything's packaged up nicely, all the cellophane in the nice box is there. You don't imagine that some of the ingredients could have been, I don't know, stirred up in a kettle in somebody's basement 7 hours from Shanghai.
That's absolutely possible. So many of the ingredients in our food today, preservatives and that sort of thing, are coming from developing countries where they're being sold much more cheaply. And in some cases, the Chinese are being accused of actually producing these products or selling these products for less than the production cost, dumping them, in other words, to capture market share.
Which is part of why we don't produce them in the United States or, for that matter, in Europe anymore.
There's certainly a number of reports that suggest that for things like citric acid and ascorbic acid, where all of the U.S. manufacturers have essentially shut down and the market has moved to Asia.
Don Lee in Shanghai and Bill Hubbard right here. I want to turn to our callers. Let me go to Tina in Newton, Massachusetts. Tina, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. I just wonder why we all finger point to FDA instead of asking all these questions to the food company. I think it's their responsibility when they go out and outsource all the food and the products, and they're supposed to inspect it before put into the consumer mouth.
That is a good question. Bill Hubbard, maybe we don't have the government resources or haven't applied them to inspect all this. Why not just say to American companies, it's your job. Know what you're putting in your food.
Well, indeed, they're scrambling now to put in place better controls over their supply chain because they realize they've got a problem. But ultimately, I think people look to the FDA to protect them from unsafe food. So having a weak FDA is not a good thing.
Don, if American companies are buying from China, do they have the power to say to the Chinese suppliers, open up your factory? We want to see what you're putting into the stuff we're dumping into our products?
Well, I think some of the companies are beginning to do that. The problem is that you can't know for sure whether some of the traders and middlemen and this convoluted chain of supply chain, who is buying from whom. And so there are many smaller providers of food ingredients. And if a larger company buys from the small company and sells it as one of its own, then it's hard for anyone to ascertain where it came from.
And pretty soon it's just in a great big flow and maybe mixed all together, hard to sort out even for a company that wants to stay on top of it. But we see American companies now, Bill, pushing for stronger FDA enforcement, maybe exactly for that reason. Kraft and Kellogg and others saying, come on, step up, because we don't want a massive loss of confidence by American consumers in the food they're eating.
That's right. I think when you see the food industry saying we want better regulation, that's a change from the past. And I think it's an important marker for the concerns that they see it, that are out there.
Let's take a call from Sherdan, Iowa. George is on the line. Hi, George. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Tom. Yeah. I'm the president of the National Family Farm Coalition, and we're a coalition of an international farm and farm worker movement
that thinks
that this globalization of our food supply and the industrialization of our food supply is really what we're talking about. You know, it's just absurd. It's impossible to expect that food ingredients or food that's produced clear on the other side of the world could be depended upon as being safe. And you know that there's labor being exploited, the environment's being exploited, when you can ship food clear around the world and it's still cheaper than what you produce it locally.
But George, haven't we had an industrialized food system in this country for a long, long time? Hasn't that brought us a lot of very economical food at the grocery store?
Well, we've been down this road a long time, but we know that the consumer really doesn't benefit when they're being fooled by a lot of marketing and, you know, food ingredients that make things taste good or smell good, but the quality's not there. They're importing things called milk protein concentrates, which doesn't even have a definition. And the FDA lets companies put that into food, and all it is concentrated milk ingredients. You don't even know what it is or where it came from.
It's making me feel sick just to think about it, George. So we hear that. You're with the National Family Farm Coalition. So no, it's not a surprise that you would want that. On the other hand, anybody who wants to dip into their pudding or whatever it is with a sense of confidence can't help but relate to what you're saying. Bill Hubbard, do we have, an ideological problem here with enforcing better food safety? I mean, there's been a kind of laissez-faire attitude that came in with the Bush administration. Has that put us out on this limb? Is it more than just a practical issue? Is it a political perspective on the world and on the food business that's got us in trouble?
Well, I do think there's been a neglect. When I went to the FDA back in the 1970s, the food program was half of the agency. Today, it's only a quarter. So it's been chipped away steadily over those years, which tells me that there has been this neglect, this lack of concern. And now this thing is coming to bite us. And I'm hoping the melamine example is a wake-up call for official Washington.
Melamine with the dead pets.
Right. They need to fix this, and they need to fix it now before it's humans.
Let's go to Washington for a moment, and Patty Lovera, Assistant Director for the Food and Water Watch. It's a consumer advocacy organization spun off from Ralph Nader's Public Citizen in 2005. Patty Lovera, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Do you have a sense that Washington is getting on top of the threat and the problem here?
Well, we hope that they are, but sadly, this is not the first food safety scare we've had in the last couple of years, and there's a lot of noise every time there is one, but we really hope that this one is the one that gets people to think, especially about these imports and how we just let everything in without really looking at it.
Now, in fairness, we've had plenty of problems in our own domestic food supply. Everybody's pulling the spinach out of the refrigerators late last year when that problem blew up. I mean, it's not just imported food. Is it unfair to point fingers at China and other food producers abroad?
No, I think we have to look at all food producers. I mean, we have to look at what you talked a minute ago about the ideological problem we have, and we agree that that is the case. I mean, we don't get new rules for food safety. We get voluntary guidance. We don't get enforcement of rules. We get, you know, what are the incentives to get producers to comply. We have a real problem with lack of enforcement of the basic food safety standards we have, and every time there's a problem, we get more and more talk about, well, how do we get the companies to police themselves? And we think that's really a privatization of these basic functions of government, which is to enforce food safety standards as a safety net.
But can the FDA stop this at ports where tons and tons and tons are pouring into this country?
They can do a lot more than 1% before we throw up our hands and say that we can't. I mean, there is zero incentive for somebody that wants to cheat, which in the case of the melamine and the wheat gluten, I mean, this was added explicitly to mask an inferior product and get a better price for it. They added that chemical intentionally, and they took that risk because they figured they weren't going to get caught. So we have to get a lot above 1% before we just toss our hands up in the air and say we have no control, we have no ability to stop this.
Yeah, that sounds very reasonable. Let me take a call from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Marielle, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Tom.
Hi.
I think you've covered some of the things that I was going to bring up. I am concerned that the FDA or whatever inspection organization exists for the United States government on behalf of the American people has been undermined over the years. I think the American people have a right to know why this has happened and from what source this negligence comes, because it just shows that, or it seems to indicate, that whoever is responsible in the American government for undermining the American people's safety has to be exposed so that we can get rid of those people.
So where do you see the source, Muriel?
What?
Where do you see the source? What's pushing this looser, more risk-vulnerable situation?
Well, I would say that it's the politicians in Washington whose main interest is in enhancing their own private store of money. I don't think they really are public servants because they're serving themselves, and this has been repeatedly shown over the last, 8 years?
Mm.
I'd also like to know if the problems that are coming from China are partly coming from American companies who have moved to China and who are undermining the welfare of the American people, and I guess they're considering themselves still Americans, by allowing this to happen with their own products.
Yeah, we'll ask it, Muriel. Let me bring it straight up. Patty, what about it? American companies are, of course, deep in this. They've gone to these products because they get better prices on them. Presumably that means better profit margins for them. How much can we depend on private companies to step up and do the right thing when it comes to food safety?
Well, that's an excellent point, and that's why we always come back to the point that companies can pledge to do better and they can, you know, have more quality control processes, but this is a responsibility of government enforcement of rules. We can't rely entirely on companies to do this for us. And we also run the risk when you do that the penalty for buying from the wrong company is getting sick, and that's unacceptable. There are basic safety standards that everyone is entitled to no matter what brand you buy, and that's the role of government regulators.
Don Lee in Shanghai, we heard Rick Weiss with The Washington Post saying earlier that the United States may find itself kowtowing to China because American exporters want access to Chinese markets because China holds so much American debt and all the rest. Do you have the sense that for all the concern that is hot right now in Washington, does China really feel vulnerable? Does China feel like it must respond to concerns in the United States or not?
I get the sense that it certainly does, because it's not just the food products. People are now questioning the whole range of what China exports, and it exports about $1 trillion worth of goods. And, you know, food and agriculture and drugs account for $30 billion. So it's a small fraction. And I think, you know, people are asking whether other Chinese-made goods also carry safety and quality risks, and asking about recalls. And so I think China wants to maintain its exports, obviously, and so it has a lot at stake here.
Lamar is calling from Saratoga, New York. Lamar, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
We're in a very, very frightening situation, and as I tried to explain to your receptionist, that I used to work in the city of New York, and I worked for a shipping company. They're no longer in business, but it had nothing to do with anything illegal. Just money.
Okay.
I used to go down with many others to the dock and inspect the goods. That's when we still had goods that came in burlap bags and on heavy lift booms.
And was this food you were looking at, Lamar?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, okay, so what?
Inspected, and if we saw anything that didn't look right, it was gone. And now everything comes in containers. I mean, all you have to go is to New Jersey or whatever. Everything's being shipped in these massive containers, which are being shipped in on trucks. And it's frightening. Now, you know what? Every time I go to my supermarket, I don't care which one it is, I am going to look at every box.
But how are you going to know if there's something wrong with an additive that you can't even see? You can't, you know, tell if it's in the Twinkie, Lamar. How do you know?
Well, first of all, I can't eat that. I have a very bad condition.
Okay. Twinkie or whatever else it might. Why do you think this is happening?
But you know what really scares me? Because
what?
I like my fruits and vegetables.
Me too.
Oh, my God. I mean, I can't eat any of that junk food because I have that gluten-free diet I have to eat.
Yeah, so?
So, it scares me to think that this, any of these chemicals, I was saying the rosary when this whole issue happened about the animals. Dear God, let Mike, the company I do business, not be the one or any of them that would have put these poisonous chemicals into my pet's food.
Yeah,
and by the
but who would even know? And now if it's for humans, we appreciate that sentiment. Keep those prayers going, Lamar. Let me get another call from Leverett, Massachusetts. Heather, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
One of the major problems is that for the last 10 years, we've been doing business with companies in China that have virtually no institutional or legal oversight of their practices. I've been running nonprofits for over a decade that are looking specifically at labor violations and anti-sweatshop issues in factories for U.S. companies.
Yeah.
And the demand for our work came from when Robert Reich was labor secretary and said, we're going to start enforcing legally the laws that we have on the books and regulations we have against child labor and forced labor in the supply chains of U.S. companies. Reich left office, and those regulations actually never did come under the enforcement regime of the U.S. Treasury.
You know, Heather, I was thinking about exactly this point. There was all the talk about exporting our labor standards and other standards to China, and instead, it seems that we're, in effect, importing Chinese standards, even onto our grocery store shelves when it comes to food safety.
Absolutely. 6 months ago, I started working on a foundation-funded project to look at the oversight of the Chinese organic label, because I had a lot of concerns based on my own work that we were starting to get products in that are labeled organic but in fact are made under normal conditions in China. And you have to remember that 5 years ago, 8 out of the top 10 polluted cities in the world were located in China. And that was also inclusive of a city where the inhabitants had been told to try to never let the water to touch their skin or to drink the water, because the water had been determined to be so polluted that it should not be ingested.
About that in the kitchen. Heather, thanks for calling. Patty, I mean, we don't want to just beat up on China. It's just one provider, but it's such an enormous one. We also don't want to shut developing countries off from trade and growth. That would hardly be fair. And yet, you know, the controls seem so loose and light. I mean, what do we do in a globalizing economy where, you know, we're told this is what it takes to grow, this is what it takes for them to get their rung on the ladder, and yet, you know, you don't want to be croaked by what you buy at the supermarket.
Right, and this is an important conversation that's long overdue from happening. And a lot of this has happened in the last, you know, 10 years with the example of China. A lot of the imports from China have really skyrocketed since they joined the World Trade Organization. And so this is not an accident that we're having more imports from all different countries. It's a policy, and we're seeing the results of that. But I think the important point is that not to lower our standards to that supposedly this playing field is even. I mean, that's a real race to the bottom, and we're suffering the consequences of that. And also, there is this assumption that this trade somehow benefits producers in that country. And there's a lot of farmers' movements around the world who say it doesn't. They say, you know, we now have plantations to export to you. We're not growing food for ourselves. So we have to really reject that model that you have to trade your way out of poverty and talk more about local production, you know, in appropriate ways. And just to add one point on to something we heard earlier about what people can do at home and country of origin labeling, it's also not an accident that we don't know where our food is coming from, because the food industry has been very responsible for stopping country of origin labeling.
The American food industry.
Yes. We were supposed to have it in 2004 for a lot of foods. Right now we only have it for seafood, because there was so much lobbying that Congress delayed the implementation of a law that would have given us country of origin labeling on quite a bit of food.
We've got a caller on just that point from Nashville. Joy is calling. Hi, Joy. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Yes. I've done business with the federal government before. And basically, everything you sell to them, you have to list the country of origin for every component that goes into whatever end product that you're giving the U.S. government. So why we as consumers can't know the country of origin for every ingredient listed on what we purchase, I don't understand. Because that's what America's about, the power to choose, the power of choice. And they're depriving us of that. And if we have that power, then we can choose not to buy products from certain companies, because they choose a dollar bill over the health of this country.
Right. And if the federal government demands it for itself, why not for a mom or dad just trying to put safe food on the table? Bill Hubbard, is it feasible to know the country of origin for every ingredient and additive in America's processed foods today.
No, I do not think that would work. There was a recent contamination with drugs in which an antifreeze was substituted for a legitimate drug that killed dozens of children around the world. And the documents that attempted to document where that antifreeze came from in China had been forged, had been counterfeited. And that can happen with food as well. So as long as you've got a supply chain this long and it's stretched out with all these materials, I don't think trying to put a stamp of origin is going to solve the problem. You need a regulatory system that looks at these foods, examines them, tests them, and determines whether they're good and let them in or not.
Don Lee in Shanghai, how close is China to getting on top of this? Do you have the sense that there's a serious nationwide effort to bring about regulation that would make its food supply safe? I mean, as you pointed out, plenty of Chinese die every year from contaminated, tainted food in China. Do they have the will? Do they have the capacity? Are they anywhere near a day when they'll be able to give proper oversight to their own food supply and food exports?
I think most would agree that there's a long way to go. China, is talking a good game right now because there's a lot of international pressure. But the reality is that the standards are not in place. There are a dozen agencies that have some kind of oversight of food and drug products, but the jurisdictions are often not clear. There are so many small farmers, and it's hard to reach them in remote areas, and it just does not have the capacity at this point to monitor and enforce the weak regulations that they currently have.
So even if they wanted to stop it, they might not be able to, but yet we're galloping ahead, integrating these food suppliers into the global food supply and cutting back on our own inspection resources at the same time. It seems like there's something wrong with this formula. Rainbow's calling from Boston. Rainbow, you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I just went to Hong Kong, China, all different places, looking at comparison of the clinical trial in medicine, comparing Indian, China, USA.
Clinical trials in medicine, okay.
Yeah, biotech medicine. Mm-hmm. Anyway, my point I actually want to make is regarding I should consider the consumer responsibility. So that's why I say if you don't chew your food, who will?
If you don't choose it, but how is a consumer?
No, if you don't chew your food.
Chew.
Yeah. So in other words, who will? Same thing with if you don't select your food correctly. Normally, Chinese people don't eat anything else, and that's something they already know for years.
But so, what are we I mean, look, I love eating in Hong Kong, love eating in China. I've done a lot of it. But when I'm back in the United States at the supermarket and I don't even know what's in the package as a consumer, how am I supposed to make an informed choice, Rainbow? Don't I have a right to some kind of protection from poison in the package?
Then I'm actually calling for a suggestion for you. Mm-hmm. And in the biotech symposium recently held, the suggestion actually consider manufacturing in China, but go through Hong Kong and Australia, do regulation, because Hong Kong and Australia much more westernized.
Okay, if I can find out where it's been tracked, how it's been shipped, but I'm not sure how that fixes it if it's bad from the get-go. Thanks for calling. Let me get one from Evans, Georgia. Shula, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Last year, I bought a can of lychees that came from China. When I opened the can and pulled the lychees out, mm-hmm. black flakes came out with the lychees. So
yum.
I inspected the can, and there is a ban. I actually still have the can right now, and I'm looking at it. It has a ban of gray-black stuff on the can itself.
Ooh, okay, so what do you do about that, Shula?
Well, I called the health department. I was told to call the agriculture department, the local one I did. I was told to call the one in Atlanta I did, and they told me to call the FDA, and I did. And I have all the name of the people that I have called.
Did they give you satisfaction?
No. You know what the FDA told me?
No.
That they are not allowed to inspect any food coming from China or foreign food.
Well, I guess they inspect a little, but not enough to catch your can full of gray and black gunk.
They have no right to remove anything that expired by date. They have no right. The law, according to what the FDA, Miss Penny Smith in Atlanta told me, they cannot touch it.
Well,
isn't that wonderful?
No, it's not. But we're glad as a citizen that you're on top of trying to track it down. And I guess buyer beware is the message right there. Shula, stay healthy. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Trelawney. Trelawney, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
It strikes me that, as I listen, that this is a very complex issue with a lot of different things that need to happen. But I think one of the most important ingredients, as it were, in this topic is the political sort of diplomatic and trade issue between the U.S. and China that comes down to our deficit and how they have been basically funding our budget deficit for so many years that our hands are completely tied in enforcing our standards on anything in China. And that comes up especially in the human rights field, where we can't do anything about their egregious human rights violations, and as the other caller mentioned, with their slave labor. And I'm wondering whether the reason our inspection of Chinese food, as the previous caller just mentioned, is completely toothless, might have something to do with this budget deficit that they've been funding. And my hope is that maybe now that China has decided to stop buying U.S. Treasury bonds, we might be able to enter into a more honest relationship with them, wherein our hands aren't so
tight. Well, they've got trillions already, but you really think that the debt is so deep that we have to accept poisonous food from China? I mean, that talk about subservience,
well,
that's getting right down there.
Yeah, well, but look at the human rights issue. I mean, we basically do nothing other than a tiny, tiny little hand slap compared to other countries where we're cutting off all kinds of trade.
We take your point. Trelawney, thanks for making it. Patty Lavera, how about it? The combination of mounting Chinese power with its surpluses and all the debt that it holds. On the other hand, a kind of ideology in Washington lately that says government hands off, let's get out of the regulation business. Paul Krugman writes today that the problem is caused by the dominance within our government he calls it a literally sickening ideology, i.e. making us sick when we eat unregulated food. Where do you see the greater weight of, responsibility behind this problem, Patty?
Well, I think it's not a China-specific problem. It is a regulatory absence problem. So we've seen time and time again for years, but it's getting worse with this administration, that public health takes a back seat to trade. And so it's, whether you're talking about mad cow disease and where we take our animals from, our cattle come from, or imports of food. And also the domestic industry is not regulated enough as well. I mean, last year we saw peanut butter, spinach, lettuce. These are all domestic products that FDA is supposed to be regulating that caused massive recalls. So our food safety system is broken, as Bill Hubbard said earlier, and the trade piece just adds more of a burden on there that we have to get on top of.
Bill Hubbard, is it unreasonable for an American citizen to expect fundamental safety in their food supply? Is that somehow grown beyond what American citizens should be able to count on?
Absolutely not, Tom. I think if you poll people, and there have been polls that show people see food safety as a quintessential government responsibility, that no matter how people think their taxes should be spent, that's one thing that they would like to see their taxes spent on, a system to protect their food supply, because everyone eats food. Our children eat food. It's important to us. And the government needs to spend taxpayer money wisely to create a strong FDA, in my view, and that has not happened. The FDA is weaker than it's ever been in the food safety area. If that doesn't get fixed, we're all at risk.
So how much can we fix from this side, let's say bolstering the FDA, and how much are we just dependent on China to fix?
Well, Congress is clearly going to look at legislation to put more responsibility over there. Whether that will happen or not, I don't know. But you certainly need to beef up the U.S. side while you're thinking about what to do with China.
Because Don Lee in Shanghai says they can't fix it if they want to.
I think he's absolutely right. There are so many suppliers, and it's not just China. We're talking developing countries all around the world. We get half of our fruits and vegetables from Latin America in the winter.
Don Lee, what do you think? Is China going to try to step up on this front? I mean, Bill's right, it's all over the world, but you're sitting in Shanghai, and it's a big exporter. Will they try to answer these cries?
I think they will try. For one reason, the people in China are complaining, and they're increasingly wary about the food supply. And if their citizens are unhappy, then they're going to have to answer. And I think eventually, then that would be good news for us, because for Americans, because the food supply will get better.
Can't happen too soon for me. Don Lee with the Los Angeles Times in Shanghai, thank you very much for being with us from China this hour.
Thanks for having me.
And Patty Lavera at Food and Water Watch in Washington. Patty, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Bill Hubbard with the Coalition for a Stronger FDA. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.